The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
The following program is being brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Anyone could light a candle. Just like a flower in the rain. You are unique, the same. Each step you take.
Welcome to Our Sacred Journey with your host, Audrey Katagawa. Our program is designed to bring you inspiration, new perspectives, and experiences of love, compassion, and kindness in action. Our guests are global citizens who live and manifest their values, principles, and ideals. Come share in their activism and values that are making positive contributions to humanity. Now, here is Audrey Katagawa.
Monday afternoon to all of our listeners. This is Audrey Kitagawa, your host of Our Sacred Journey. We love starting off our week with inspiring guests, and today, Dr. Solomon Katz returns in the second half of two programs. Now, he is the director of the Krogman Center for Research in Child Growth and Development and is a professor of anthropology at the University of Pennsylvania. He is also the Chief Executive Officer of the World Food Forum. His Encyclopedia of Food and Culture, which entails three volumes and 2,000 pages, was awarded both the Dartmouth Medal and Emerald Award. He was editor of a 14-book series on the history and anthropology of food and nutrition that included four books on famine and food security in sub-Sahara Africa. Currently, he chairs the American Anthropological Association Task Force on World Food Problems. He was a former president of the Institute on Religion in an Age of Science and founding president of the MetaNexus Institute on Religion and Science. He is also a former trustee of the Council for Parliament of the World's Religions. He is currently chairing the 59th Annual Institute on Religion in an Age of Science Summer Conference at Silver Bay, New York, on July 27th to August 3rd, 2013, entitled The Scientific, Spiritual, and Moral Challenges in Solving the World Food Crisis. Dr. Katz, thank you so much for returning to Our Sacred Journey. To help us create the sacred space for our program, is there a prayer that you would like to share with us?
Yes. Thank you first for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you and with all the listeners of your wonderful program. Every religious faith and every society of the world has a special prayer or blessing around being thankful for our food. And today I would like to suggest that in this little prayer, may each of us be blessed with the opportunity to provide a full and abundant and healthful foods for all of humanity throughout our great world.
Amen, and thank you so much for sharing that beautiful prayer with us, Dr. Katz. Now, during your previous broadcast on Our Sacred Journey, you shared a very beautiful story about having a last conversation with your father, where you were able to share with him the fruits of your finding the Greek family who received the heifer cows you took care of as a young boy at your dad's request. And your dad, in his generosity, agreed to take care of these cows until the plane that was supposed to transport them overseas could be repaired. Is there something that you would like to share now about your mother and her influence on your development of your values and character?
Well, thank you. It's a great opportunity to talk about my mother's wonderful influence on me as well. My mother always said, well, she was involved in naming me Solomon, and she said to always to try to live up to my name, to be fair and to be just and to be concerned with all those around me. So that's part of what my legacy is from my mother. As she extended her love to me, she also made it clear that I had responsibilities to live up to. So I've tried throughout my life to do that.
Well, you certainly seem to have lived up to your very beautiful name, Dr. Katz.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And my mother also had her mother, and that was my grandmother. My grandmother had a role to play, too. And she was a wonderful cook, a wonderful cook. And so she never used a cookbook. But as a child, I can remember the very first interest that I had in food or even contact with the whole idea is to write down recipes. I would operationalize recipes that my grandmother cooked. And in order for us to have some knowledge of what went into these wonderful dishes that she created. So she was a big influence as well.
Well, thank you for sharing about your beautiful family. You know, I've mentioned this upcoming 59 Summer Conference of Institute on Religion in an Age of Science in my introduction of you, and it's such an important conference, and I really would like you to share with us more about this conference and how interested persons can participate.
Yes, well, I think that everyone can participate in this. It's still open, first of all, for registration for those who can be in the area. And it's going to be meeting on the dates
July 27th to August 3rd
in 2013. And that's at Silver Bay in New York State. And that's on a lake, a wonderful lake called Lake George. So there is an opportunity to go online to see more about it. And that's at www.iras, Institute on Religion and Age of Science, iras.org. And you can find that right there and go on and look at it understand from at least on computer what it's all about. And in addition, there are workshops that people can participate in. There are all kinds of plenary sessions, and it's a very rich opportunity for people to become involved and to know one of the meaningful steps that will be helpful in solving these world food problems.
Well, thank you for sharing that valuable information with us. You know, Dr. Katz, we covered a lot of territory on the food issue during our last program. And, you know, from the problems regarding food security, the development of huge agribusiness interests, the ethical dimensions surrounding food, food safety, health problems associated with food, genetically modified foods, processed foods, additives, as well as food waste. And I asked you to return because it didn't seem as if we even scratched the surface of this really important global issue. And it seems from our conversation that there does not appear to be a systematic way that the various issues around food are sufficiently or transparently regulated, and that the approach seems to be more reactive than proactive. And it almost sounds as if this whole issue has gotten away in its overwhelming state from regulatory agencies to be able to exercise a really coherent handle on the matter. So toward that end, I wanted to go into another important aspect for you to address, and that is the accurate labeling of food products so consumers can honestly know what they are purchasing and consuming. For example, a lot of genetically modified foods are not disclosed on food products. So can you share with us about this?
Sure. The issue is right now there's a tremendous concern and a rising concern in the public about labeling the genetically modified foods on the food label itself, so that consumers can know if that's present or not present in the foods they're consuming. However, I think when you said coherent, I think that the point is loud and clear to me that if we're going to be coherent about it and to be fair and just about it, I think there are a lot of other things that are done to the seeds that have yielded the products that people eat that also ought to be on the label. In other words, I think this needs to be part of a comprehensive relabeling, if you will, rather than such a narrow perspective on it. So, for example, many of the seeds that yielded all the hybrid seeds that are being used that are not genetically modified in the sense of taking some gene from some other organism and placing it in the seed, as that technique works, but instead are mixing up the genes that are present, and they do that through irradiation of seed. A lot of seeds have been, a lot of the hybrids that have been created that we consume regularly are based upon that technology. So there are a lot of technologies out there that have been used widely that influence the foods we eat. And I think that if we're going to label one thing, we better label all of the things that are in there, including all the other processes and products that may be critically important to our decisions about whether we consume it. Likewise, what that does, though, it stimulates us as members of the consuming public to become much more knowledgeable about the food that we eat and to have much better sources of information about it. In fact, one of the motivations I had in doing that giant encyclopedia that I did was to provide a coherent place for people to look to actually understand all about this. So it's really an important issue to have solid, digested knowledge coherently placed in a single place, so to speak, that people can get this information. Right now, there are all these different sources on the web, some of which are accurate, some of which are inaccurate, and there's no way for people to judge. So it's a really important issue to get the education up, along with all kinds of changes to labeling. So I'm in favor of people the right to know, but I'm also in favor of having a much broader basis for the right to know. That is to say, an opportunity for people to know everything about it.
And how would we get access to this wonderful encyclopedia of food and culture of 3 volumes and 2,000 pages that you helped to create? How does the public get a hold of this encyclopedia?
Well, it's distributed throughout the world, and Gale, G-A-L-E, Press is the distributor for it. Most of the reference libraries of the world have this encyclopedia now, so I'm very lucky to, I think that those awards had a nice feedback effect on having most libraries in the world purchase it. So it's available there, and through your own library, many of the libraries give you online privileges where you can actually access it that way. But if you do get to your library, it's a much more fun way to look at it in its living form, because I think you'll find it challenging and interesting to browse through it as well as look up specific details.
Well, I would really appreciate having, you know, accurate labeling, but I can see just from what you have shared that in and of itself is quite a huge area. And I suppose if everything were to be disclosed, whether products have been irradiated, you know, whether genes have been mixed, whether genetic abnormalities have been created, that they probably wouldn't be any space available on these little labels. So that in and of itself may be problematic, but I think consumers as a whole still would like to have more information than less information, so we can ascertain the potential, you know, harmfulness of products that we may be purchasing for ingestion.
Well, I think that with our smartphones, we probably could have an opportunity to actually integrate the knowledge that we have through the accessibility that may be on these labels in the future. But right now, you're right. Also, I think that it's a really important problem, how to get the information across to the public, how to have the public be able to receive that and act upon it appropriately.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Katz. We're going to have to go on break right now to all of our listeners on our sacred journey. We're having a fascinating conversation with Dr. Solomon Katz. We'll be right back.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN.
Many of us make choices in our lives based on how others react. But what should really matter is making our life choices based on what we intuitively feel. By tuning in to The Mystic and the Mystery with Inspired Intuition hosts Beth Porojic and Christine McIver, you'll receive the tools and inspiration you need to do just that. Your fears do not have to drive you, and you are naturally intuitive, creative, and whole. By believing in yourself, you can live the life you've been longing for. Listen for The Mystic and the Mystery every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America 7th Wave Channel.
This is the 7th Wave Channel on the Voice America Network.
Are tuned in to Our Sacred Journey. To reach Audrey Katagawa, please send an email to dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. That's dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. And now back to Our Sacred Journey.
Welcome back to Our Sacred Journey. This is Audrey Katagawa with my special guest, Dr. Solomon Katz. Dr. Katz, you know, there seems to be a trend towards patenting life forms or biological patenting of seeds. And by way of example, and I just wanted to ask, how do you feel about biological patenting?
Well, I honestly was not in favor of it to start with because I felt that it is important to leave life forms as they were, in the sense of not trying to own any person's DNA and or any organism's DNA. However, now that we have patenting of life forms, we're probably going to need to live with it but altered life forms. In other words, I'm not sure that we have to have any specific gene sequence from any living organism be patented per se, but I think if somebody alters that and it comes out better for whatever purposes, that's probably going to be continued, and I would be in favor of not trying to eliminate that. And because there's been such an investment already made to accelerating all of the technologies that are out there for human purposes, for plant purposes and animal purposes, etc. So I think that we're going to have to live with it and hopefully come up with a better solution than we have now.
Well, in addition to patenting, though, you had mentioned before we went on break the importance of investing in regulation. And do you think that this whole area is properly regulated to begin with?
Well, I think that this was a really important problem. What it is that the new technologies come along very rapidly, and no one knows in the beginning where it's going to go. And they try to, in a society like ours and in the rest of the world where you have patenting and capitalism, et cetera, they try to do the best thing they can. Sometimes it's not perfect, and sometimes it needs to be revised, and I think this is a good example of that. I think with regard to the human genome, it's very clear that the program that they initiated right at the very start, called the Ethical, Legal, and Social Implications of the Genome Program, which is part of the program in the United States, which really initiated all of this, came out really well. In fact, what happened was that many problems that were occurring as the program made new discoveries, etc., all were adjudicated and carefully thought through, and things were weeded out that weren't right and were inappropriate, and those directions have never been started even. So I think that having an ethical, social, and legal implications for the plant world, for the agricultural world, would also be an extremely valuable enterprise to begin even now.
Well, I would agree with you, especially since we don't quite clearly understand yet what the ramifications may be on the impact of these plants that we are creating on our health. So in any event, that is something that we really need to explore more carefully. And I wanted to now ask you to share with us about this whole aspect of climate change on the impact of our food supplies.
Well, climate change is an enormously important problem. It's probably the biggest problem that we have in the world today around whether or not we're going to have enough food for all of the people that are living now and whether we'll have enough food for those who will be alive in the future as population continues to grow. You know, by 2050, the predictions now are 9 billion plus, and the plus is not clear exactly how many more, over 9 billion by that point. But certainly 9 billion is a reasonable estimate, and with maybe 400 or 500 more millions to be fed by 2050, that is over 9 billion, that is. So I think, look, temperature is a really important part of the problem. We're having more extremes in temperatures throughout the world today. And so temperature can stunt crops. Crops that have been evolved for a certain kind of climate don't do nearly as well when the temperatures get up too high. So that's they really decrease their productivity. That's one thing. Secondly, the climate change has induced a huge change in the intensity of storms, so the wind and excess rain that can occur, the flooding, etc., all of these things can ruin crops. And then it also promotes the other extreme of dryness, of desiccation. So you have parts of the world that are not getting the same rain they used to get, and the net effect is that that's where populations are fairly large, and they're not having sufficient food and the production because of that. So Those are just some of the problems. Another big problem is that we have an enormous melt occurring in the particularly in the North Poles and in the South Poles to some extent. But it's very clear that in Greenland right now there's a huge change in the volume of the ice that's present. So much of the ice in Greenland is melting, and that is ice that's pure water. In fact, it still is sold as ice cubes in some areas. Where you can have beautiful ice cubes from that are thousands of years old, right from very pure water that became snow many, many centuries ago. So what I'm suggesting is that all that fresh water resource is just running into the sea right now. So sea levels rise both from the melt and from the increase in temperature. So water expands a little from increase in temperature. The overall sea level in the world is rising. Sea water is salty, and sea salty doesn't work for foods. And unfortunately, so many foods are being produced in the world today around the river deltas where the soil was very rich and rivers were flowing into the sea. That was a great way to know that you'd have enough water and also to have all the soil that was present to raise these crops. So places like the Mekong Delta, the Ganges River Delta, other river deltas throughout the world are all being salinized right now. That salinized meaning there's more salt in the water that kills the plants. And so the plants are not doing as well. And the land, therefore, that is being covered by salt water now is no longer available for agricultural purposes. So the land is actually shrinking in the world as the sea level rises for two reasons, just because there's salt water there generally and because there's more salt in the soil that leaches in from the rise in seawater. So those are some of the problems. These are all negatives, okay? But in fact, what we need to do is to plan for these negatives, and we need to lay out those plans and start to really seriously develop them in order to maintain the present level of food produced as well as to obtain new levels of food production for the future.
Well, that is a major problem, isn't it, between the growing desertification of land masses as well as the shrinking of existing land masses as these glaciers melt and, you know, go into the sea and put more land underwater. So I can foresee that it's going to be a huge problem to see how we can continue to have food supplies made available to growing populations as well.
If we add all of the water that humans use for irrigation, for drinking, for all the commercial uses, et cetera, industrial uses, together, the amount of water that's melting just from Greenland alone right now is in about 2 weeks' worth of meltwater from Greenland equals the whole year's worth of human use of water for all purposes throughout the world. So it gives you some idea of the magnitude of this. This is enormous changes that are happening. That's why there's no ice up in the Arctic, you know, in the summers, and they're thinking there'll be no ice as of a few years.
Well, I really would like to have you delve into possible solutions that we can consider in the last segment of our program. But I understand that you are a proponent of preserving rural and traditional ways of agriculture. So please share with us why you feel this is so important.
Well, there's several reasons. First is that, think about this. As of just a few years ago, it shifted from most people living rural in rural areas of the world to now urban areas. In other words, and now more than half of the world lives, just as of a couple of years ago, lives in the urban areas of the world. They all came from farms. They've all migrated from farms. I mean, this was what the huge change was. In 100 years, and there was a huge change in the United States, which is heavily, heavily industrialized for agriculture right now. But so the people are moving off the farm. So my question is if we have billions of poor people living in the cities now, can you imagine if we that have been migrated away from the farms, can you imagine if we continue that process and have fewer people on those farms? There's no place for these people to go. Think about this from that point of view alone. But if they're being, particularly if they're forced off the land, will they become sharecroppers on large farms that are owned by other people? Or are they going to just become agricultural workers and not participate the way they were? So there's some really important reservoirs of knowledge that these people have as well. They know the land, the pests, the opportunities for production, et cetera. There's a tremendous amount of knowledge that these people have about the local conditions for raising food that no one else necessarily knows. And so the question really is how can we combine their traditional knowledge and their labor with the new knowledge that we have about agriculture? And my suggestion is that what we have to start doing is respecting these traditions and respecting their rights to the land that they had and trying to work through new ways of providing our education to them and their education to us. We need something, for example, the United States right now has a wonderful program, I think has been wonderful, called the Peace Corps. But what we need in addition to that now is a food corps where we trade the agricultural knowledge that we have with others who will educate our people as well. So I think there's an equal trade that needs to be going on. These traditional peoples have 1,000 stories, each thousands and thousands of stories on insights that may help us sustainably support food in the future. We can't afford to lose the knowledge that they have. So I think there's a huge need to sit down and respect and listen to the other and understand where they're coming from and how we can combine forces to make a much, much better increase in productivity.
Well, I agree with you that maintaining our institutional historic knowledge and being able to work them and coalesce them together with the new technologies would be very important. And we're going to have to go on another break. This is Audrey Kitagawa with Dr. Solomon Katz on our Sacred Journey. We'll be right back.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Who am I? Why am I here? Where am I going? How do I get there? If you're searching for the answers to these and other spiritual questions, you can look within, and you can tune into The Open Door. Our program will expand your awareness of the teachings of the Ascended Masters, offer you practical tools that promote self-mastery and personal freedom, and provide an unerring pathway for graduating from Earth Schoolroom. The Open Door with host Tom Schumacher and Terry Kennedy is broadcast live every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Ask Theo Live is talk radio like you've never heard before. Following her near-death experience, world-renowned author and spiritual medium Sheila Gillette became the direct voice channel for Theo, a consortium of 12 archangels. Through this unique channel, Sheila and her co-host Marcus Gillette present you with an opportunity to speak directly with Theo live on air on any topic you wish to discuss, including receiving authentic messages from deceased loved ones and angelic guides. Get the answer you need by tuning in to Ask Theo Live Talk Radio. Tuesday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on Seventh Wave Network.
The Seventh Wave Channel on the Voice America Network.
You are tuned in to Our Sacred Journey. To reach Audrey Katagawa, please send an email to dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. That's dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. And now, back to Our Sacred Journey.
Welcome back to Our Sacred Journey. This is Audrey Katagawa with my special guest, Dr. Solomon Katz. Now, Dr. Katz, your work has also entailed a lot of initiatives with the religious and interreligious communities, and I wanted you to share with us why you feel it's so important to include religious communities in your work on food issues.
Well, first, if we think about the great religions of the world, all of them are around for very long periods of time, and what they do is they have dedicated themselves to various concerns that take centuries in some respects to achieve. So unlike our secular world, which goes from election to election and from this group of political leaders to the next group, the religious communities of the world sort of stick with the same program. And the program, that one of the pieces of religious communities that's so important is that they're not only concerned for the other, they're also concerned with the social justice towards the other. And every religion of the world is also deeply concerned with helping and sharing their food with one another. So that, in fact, the charitable side of religious communities toward world food problems is enormous and is present. So the real question is that, how can we join our scientific knowledge that we're developing so rapidly with respect to food and integrating that with the knowledge that the already well-developed opportunities for helping with world food? So if we look then further at the religious communities, and we can see that they're wonderful at feeding people and when they're in times of great need. That's been done and demonstrated time and time again. The question then becomes, can we help the religious communities of the world to begin to support their efforts towards feeding people to helping people feed themselves? So it's really important that we move from providing the food to then providing the education and the support for people to be able to feed themselves. If they can, in developing the rural areas of the world, a lot of those problems with the rural areas that I talked about just before will begin to disappear. Once that's, if we think about that, then the next step is, how can we get the religious communities of the world to work together? Because it's only together, just the way governments work together to have food programs, we need religious communities of the world to work together. We all want, all religious communities want better interreligious dialogue, and that's being achieved. I think there's a lot of progress being made in terms of better interreligious dialogue, Now the question is, can we have interreligious cooperation to get this job that all religions of the world would like to see done? And then how do we bridge that with the best knowledge of science and begin to have new levels of dialogue to accomplish these goals?
Well, I think, the religious communities have long been understood to have tremendous outreach to their constituents on the ground and the grassroots level. And basically, I think you're talking about the outreach factor to the grassroots on this important issue. So what is your recommendation on how religious communities can come together and cooperate on this very important food issue to help, like, for example, our government agencies whose job it is to ensure that their citizens have food security?
I think this is one of the great opportunities that we have in the world today. This is, in a sense, we now are beginning to fully understand how important the world food problems are. And now what we're able to do with that challenge, I'm hoping that challenge leads to very constructive work among the different religions, and we need to start now. And so that's exactly what our conference is focused upon this summer. In other words, how can we combine the knowledge we have with the whole idea that the religious communities of the world largely control the socio-political realm as well. In other words, they're the ones that create, they're the people of the world who can create the social action necessary to help governments become more responsive to the needs of all these others who are not able to provide for themselves right now.
Of course, you know, there are certain hurdles that need to be overcome. Like, for example, I think the United Nations has well understood the importance of contacting religious communities to do programs, whether it's like smallpox vaccination or polio vaccinations, and a lot of religious communities are engaged to help that. But if there are religious tenets or creeds or dogmas involved that may seem to be contrary to their doctrinal and philosophical stances, that may also pose some difficulty with doing the implementation of any programs.
Well, as you indicated in your introduction to me, that I'm also been, and you too have been active in the Parliament of the World's Religions, which is an example of an organization that that has literally put many of the leaders in the religious communities of the world together and has started a dialogue that actually works. And so what we need to do is to encourage those leaders and others like them to begin to work together. And, of course, the important work the United Nations has been doing in getting the NGOs of the world together on this topic is enormously important. And I think there's light in this tunnel, if you will, that and there is hope. And one of the things that I think religion, the religions of the world has provided for so many people is a sense of hope and a sense that, in fact, being together and cooperating in this great endeavor of providing for the world is a wonderful way for us to begin a new level of cooperation like which we've never seen before. And I think it's really possible now to use the media of communications that we have and the knowledge that we have about what the problems are and the goodwill that's there to solve them, to put all of that to this great task that lies in front of us all.
Well, I love the title of the conference, Scientific, Spiritual, and Moral Challenges in Solving the World Food Crisis. And so I think it behooves us to really engage the religious communities because, you know, approximately 95% of the world are believers. So that is a huge constituency that really needs to be positively engaged on this critical issue. So if you could give us that website address again for the Institute on Religion in an Age of Science Summer Conference, I'd really appreciate it.
Okay, that is going to be IRAS.org. And it's, if you really want to further, /2013.html is the full address of the page that describes the conference in great detail.
Well, it's obviously a very important conference, and I encourage all of our listeners to please check out the website and see how you can become engaged on this very, very important and critical issue to our survival. So now, Dr. Katz, I wanted to ask you, should there be a uniform code of ethics that players in our food industries should abide by? Now, like, and where would you recommend that the ethical codes are most needed? On the level of the growers, the manufacturers, the distributors? So please share your ideas with us.
Sure. Well, I think that the ethical codes need to be adhered to. There are many of them there now. In fact, there's a lot of good ethical codes that have been developed over the years that ought to govern how people behave who provide for the food at these different levels. But the fact of the matter is we all know that we need to revise the way we think about food for the world. I think that what we need to do is to inculcate this with a sacred trust. The sacred trust is that by following the ethical principles of putting food first, is a food first, carrying out the message of the United Nations from 1948 that says that everyone is entitled to food and water. That what we need to do is to underline that and actually work in that direction so that there's no question about the ethics of making food available to everyone in the world. That will eliminate a lot of the world's problems. A lot of the world's problems will disappear if we all work together to achieve that. So many things that we think are not related become related to that one issue. So by putting that first and being mindful of that, I think that begins to get us to the adhere to a general ethical stance. Because once that's accepted, then the immorality of not following it becomes so clear that no one will trespass across those lines. I think that, again, what we need to do is to renew that and have a renewal of the spirit that underlies the ethical codes and principles that we now have for our industries. And I think all of them would prefer to go on it. And I think what we need to do, of course, is just in case there are those who don't, we obviously need to invest literally in a much greater investment in the regulation and the need to make sure that it's being adhered to. Until we can be satisfied that that's the case, I'm afraid we're going to have to invest more in it. Too little is invested in this now, and issues of food safety become involved, et cetera. So it's a really important theme. I think who needs the code? You asked who needs the code the most. You know, is it the growers, the manufacturers, or the distributors? Honestly, all. There's something ethical about every movement and every piece of the food chain that we talk about. So, in fact, this enters in at every step along the way. And if each person and each leadership and each group would do its job in expressing that, in calling our attention to when it's not being expressed properly, I think is a laudable goal to achieve. So I think that there are social movements around now that are calling attention to this. We're loaded down with these things at other levels, but I think we'll address that more in a few minutes.
Okay, great. We're going to have to go on another break right now. This is Audrey Kitagawa with Dr. Solomon Katz. You're listening to Our Sacred Journey. We'll be right back.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network by keeping up with us on Twitter. You can find us at Voice America TRN. The Mayan calendar tells us that we will be entering into a 260-day opportunity for us to engage in conscious co-creation with Great Spirit. How will we prepare ourselves for this exciting and unprecedented time in Earth's history? Peter Tung has dedicated over 20 years of his life's work to exploring that which is beyond understanding. Peter will help increase your awareness and education on this enlightening transformation in consciousness. Awakening to Conscious Co-Creation airs live Wednesdays at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on Seventh Wave Network. The Voice America Seventh Wave Channel.
Are tuned in to Our Sacred Journey. To reach Audrey Katagawa, please send an email to dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. That's dmaudrey@lightofawareness.org. And now back to Our Sacred Journey.
Welcome back to Our Sacred Journey with Dr. Solomon Katz. Now, Dr. Katz, you're touching upon really important areas, and I wanted to ask you with respect to, regulations, can you tell us, on the regulations, monitoring, and enforcement areas that are needed the most on the food issue?
Yes, I think every country of the world, including our own, needs to invest more in the area of supervision and regulation of the process to ensure that the laws that are in place, for example, in the United States, are actually adhered to. Not that we need a lot more laws. I think what we need is a lot more care concerning the amount of money that's invested in our society in overseeing. Like meat inspectors and food inspections, et cetera. There just isn't enough. It's just too spotty to even think that we have wonderful laws. We can't adhere to the laws because, in essence, there's no one to enforce them.
Well, and so there's been some discussion about, possible compromises in relationships between the enforcers and those that are to be enforced. So I think along the lines, there are serious issues that really need to be studied, and we need to consider what we can do to overcome these serious problems. But, in our country, with the federal cutbacks and all, monitoring as well as enforcement can be real problems.
I completely agree, and we have to solve this, and this involves everyone's safety. It involves the safety of the food coming into our country as well. In other words, we need to be sure that the food is safe at a variety of levels. And right now, we can't assure that because there's just not enough testing being done. So we need to really revise the way we look at this, and that's too important for the whole country, and it's too important for every other country. So every country is we know about the problems in China. With food adulteration. We also know that there are problems with growing food where there is arsenic, let's say, in the rice. That's becoming well known now. Likewise, the classic example in the EU right now is horse meat not being put into the beef meat, and that crossing over boundaries that were very disgusting to so many people.
So it's not only a country specific, but really these are global regulatory problems that all countries need to work on and focus on together.
Yes, and that's a great opportunity for more cooperation and collaboration. There is transfer of that knowledge, and there are great opportunities for more transfer of the knowledge and sharing of that. That's something that can cross political lines.
And can you share with us some of the solutions that our listeners can learn more about and perhaps you can engage in on the problems and challenges facing the food issue?
Yes, I think that some of the important things are we all have to set examples for ourselves. So in order to really do this, I think that we have to start with solving the problems of food right in our own home. I think you can start, for those of us who have sufficient food, not ever to waste the food. If we go out to a restaurant, be sure not to waste the food. That doesn't mean we have to overeat if there's more food than we can possibly consume on our plate. What we need to do is to take home and make sure that those leftovers get refrigerated and used the next day or the same day and later in the day. The point is that we have to be very mindful of the process of not wasting food and maybe buying more than we need, all the other things that we can do to make a difference. So that's something we can do right away. That alone, if we were to solve that alone, would make a huge difference in the world. So that's one thing we can do. We can also be mindful about the process of what we're consuming. If we consume beef, for example, and beef is okay, I'm not saying we shouldn't consume it, but maybe what we should consume is a little less meat overall than we now consume. So maybe one day without meat would be a proper way to think about it. Or less of it. And that in and of itself will also produce a lot of excess food in the world for those who don't have sufficient amounts to consume. So there are different things that we can do right away that we should be doing. And when we do them ourselves, we become much more conscious of how to get this to work with others as well. So I think this is something that we can do. And I think these are just some simple examples. And the other thing is we need to be very conscious of what the whole food system looks like. How does it really work? We have to become educated. All of us have to take that on as a goal and demand it of our educational systems. The kids need to be educated about food. It's not a thing to be put in the back pocket or as a side issue. It's a primary issue, and we need to revise education. So if we teach math to learn how to cook, that would be fine. They can be combined. In other words, a half of this and three quarters of that can be things for fractions for kids in the fourth or fifth grade. Likewise, other things can be learned through preparing food for ourselves and learning about the whole system, if you will, as we go. So there's plenty of opportunities for doing this.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Katz. And maybe you can even put up a bulletin board of good ideas on solutions from the people who attend your conference on the food issue. And please share with us what final message you would like to convey to our listeners.
I think we have. Thank you for that opportunity. And I will also make sure that either through our World Food Forum that we're organizing right now or through the bulletin board on that conference will do just what you suggested. But I think that the important thing that we can do is I think we need to understand that the problem is immense. The problem is immense with regard to providing for food for the world. And I believe that we can do it if everyone works together to do that. So we all need to join hands, join traditions, and get together, understand what the problems are, and use the best of our knowledge and the best of our religious devotion to solving these problems. We can do it, and we must do it, and we will do it.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Katz, and I really want to express my deepest appreciation to you for spending your time with us today to share about the important aspects of the global food issue. And food is as important as air and water for our survivability, and you have certainly illuminated our understanding by covering a wide swath of issues surrounding this fundamental necessity. May God bless you in the good works that you do to improve our knowledge and information base and engage all of us in your important work. Please tune in again next week for more inspiring conversation on our sacred journey. This is Audrey Kitagawa, your host. My special guest, Dr. Solomon Katz, and I bid you all a very good evening.
Thank you for being a part of Our Sacred Journey. Please join Audrey Kitagawa again next Monday at noon Hawaiian Standard Time, 3 p.m. in the West, 6 p.m. in the East, on the Voice America 7th Wave channel. This week, think about the contributions of love and compassion that you'll make and how together we can create a better, harmonious, and more peaceful world. Just like a flower in the wind.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit VoiceAmerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.